Dr. Paul, welcome to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. Today's show, I am talking with Dr. Monique Robles. She is a board-certified pediatric critical care doctor. I mean, these are the docs who take care of the sickest kids. She happens to also have a master's in bioethics. Put those two together and we've got a dynamite interview. We talk about what led her into medicine, pediatrics, critical care, and ethics, but then we get into the COVID vaccine for kids and for people in general. She's got an interesting take on this. You're not going to want to miss it. And she gives some information for you, the parents, and the grandparents. Bernadette closes us out with social marketing. Did you know that doctors, yes, even doctors like me, have been trained on how to coerce patients into being vaccinated? It's a technique called the presumptive process. We're going to discuss that as well. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. Today I started my day by picking a stone from an inspirational stone collection. Guess what I picked? Serenity. Boy, did I need that today. This was a day I had to sign something for the board that was dealing with 4 years of stuff I'm going through, and I just needed to be reminded that, well, as the Serenity Prayer says, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Wow, did I struggle with wisdom there and trying to sort that all out. I hope that little serenity prayer reminder can be of some help to you with whatever you might be going through. I also wanted to touch today on surrender and gratitude. I've learned so often that I must surrender to get free, to be free. And you need gratitude to overcome resentments. What we resist persists. This is something I've learned from many of the great heroes, whether we're talking St. Francis of Assisi, Gandhi, MLK, Nelson Mandela, they've all shared that same message. Our world is in a crazy power, ego, control cycle that just seems to be endless. How do we break through that? We talk about it here. It's love. It's being able to just love others and look for their spiritual goodness that's within them. That's what I strive for. I hope you join in that journey of love and breaking through. We can do this. Welcome, Dr. Monique Robles. You are somebody I didn't know about, and I'm so excited to have you on Against the Wind.
Thank you so much, Dr. Paul, for having me. It's such a pleasure.
Dr. Monique is board certified in pediatric critical care. So you go through a whole pediatric residency, then you go through this very long critical care residency. On top of that, you have a master's in bioethics. Beyond that, you became the chief resident, and that is, folks, again, it's only the top, top folks who get to be the chief. So we are looking at a cream of the crop doctor here. And it is such a delight to have the combination of you've been in pediatrics, you've been in critical care, and you have an ethics, bioethics background. We need that today. So I'm really looking forward to kind of picking your brain a little bit about what's going on in our world.
Absolutely.
I know you're on the advisory board of the Truth for Health Foundation. I'm watching what that organization is doing, trying to get great information to families and parents. The Council of Catholic Preservation of Life, Advocates for Protecting Children. You speak internationally on gender-affirming therapy, gender ideology, COVID mRNA products, and what that's doing for kids. But I'd like to start off with, I always get to know people best when just share a little bit about your background. What led you to pediatrics? What led you to critical care and then ethics?
Sure. So I grew up in a little rural place in Texas. There were four of us and children. And my oldest sibling and youngest sibling have Down syndrome. So, So really from the get-go, from the cradle, I guess, is I understood what it means to be with someone who's different. So I originally, when I was younger, wanted to be a veterinarian. So I guess medicine, right? Taking care of animals. And then I transitioned to maybe I'll be a physical therapist because I had this, I did athletics and I had this amazing physical therapist, and just his example was, in helping me through injuries, was, something I thought, wow, if I could help people this way. So when I went to undergrad, it wasn't very long that I was like, well, I'm just going to go to medical school. Just keep going. So, I went into medical school. I really can't recall, Dr. Paul, any other specialty other than pediatrics, whether, you know, a subspecialty of pediatrics, but I should say any other field really, other than pediatrics. So I started my pediatric residency, thought I was going to do pediatric hematology oncology. There was something about really sick children that drew me. But at the end of my intern year, so my first year, that's when I did my pediatric critical care rotation. And I was like, you know, the lights went off and I was like, I'm in my element and I'm the only one who gets an adrenaline rush, gets excited when the code pager goes off. Everybody else runs the other way. Something's like, wrong with me.
Yep. That's funny. I loved critical care. I would have done it, except I knew I wanted a big family. And I just saw the lifestyle of the critical care docs. I mean, you live at the hospital.
Of course, I'm working some nights, some days, and flip-flopping all the time.
Right.
But when I was there, I was there. When I was home, I was home.
Yeah. And you're having siblings with Downs. That just makes it clear to me why you might choose pediatrics and also why you might choose ethics. What led you, though, besides the obvious, were there any other issues that led you into the ethics part of your career?
So I didn't go back and receive my degree in bioethics until after I'd been established in critical care. But it was one of those, like, you know, sometimes it's not the grandiose moments that are like, oh, this is life-changing and now I need to do this. No, it's just this little thought of, you know, I think it would be better if you were able to articulate these situations, because I mean, obviously in critical care, you're dealing with very complex situations, oftentimes life and death decisions. How do I maintain my child in this chronic condition? You have discussions about withdrawal of life support. So I knew in my heart what to do, but sometimes articulating that is not always that easy. And so I thought, well, then I will go and pursue this career or at least this degree in bioethics, and it will only enhance me. I'm not sure where it's going to lead, but I think it will help me with my patient care and the families I take care of and my decision-making as well. So,
yeah. What would you say are the key ethical issues that we're facing today? Say, let's just go ahead and stick with pediatrics and sort of family dynamics or whatever.
Absolutely. So I have seen, and I think you would agree, that over the past several years, I have seen I don't want to call it a direct attack, but I see an agenda where parental rights are being chipped away. Parent has to ask the early adolescent to see his or her records, yet this child really doesn't even understand what's going on a good portion of the time. Yeah. And the child is being taken care of by this parent or guardian, as well as the parent or guardian is the one paying for all of this medical or is ensuring all of the medical care. So I have seen that infringement on parental rights becoming more of a bigger player sort of in the field of pediatrics, which is very concerning.
Yeah, absolutely. I was reading about a law just passed in California where in grade schools now, all the way K through 12, the state is going to raise the children and make vaccine decisions and reproductive health decisions. It's like, oh my goodness.
And that That to me is absolutely anti what our country is about. We yeah. are the parents and the home is the initial school, right? It is absolutely. The primary. We are the primary educators of our children. And so I find that very concerning. And it's a detrimental not only to family but to children. It's a separation of the child from their home environment, which is mentally distressing.
Absolutely. I'm curious, your organization that you're on the advisory board, Advocates for Protecting Children, does that deal with any of this?
It deals with gender ideology. It's really an organization that goes up primarily against the gender industry and the attacks on our children. So,
yeah. Elaborate a little bit for our audience. I know for some people this gets controversial, but I mean, you come from a pediatric background. You come from a caring family, a loving family that wasn't going to abort a Downs baby, obviously.
Right, right.
So you have a deep love of life and humanity. I come from a missionary background and so similarly, we have some similarities in
yes.
just loving people and all that.
Right.
But what's happened, and I'm sure you've seen it in your career, it feels like the last 10, 15 years, more and more adolescents, and especially, have this gender identity confusion. And man, just wasn't seeing it the first 15 years of my career, but the last 15, it's like exponentially, it's exploding. What's going on?
Yeah. So if we look at sort of the timeline of events, really the first gender ideology clinic opened in 2007 here in the United States. And a lot of this was already happening, in the European, the Netherlands. And, but the idea of, having genders instead of and taking away that true definition of sex was incorporated in 2007. And initially the gender affirming therapy had basically three steps: to puberty blockers. Oh, let's give them time to decide. So we're going to halt puberty and let them consider which way they're going to go. Is it going to be male, female, or some spectrum in between? And then once that decision was made, then the next step was cross-sex hormones and then gender reassignment surgery. But as of, in the past probably decade or so, I would say, there is now an initial step that's been added, social affirmation. And so social affirmation begins outside of the medical field. So we're seeing the initiation of this in preschools, kindergarten schools. And so it's a child at a very young developmental age who does understand what the difference between boys and girls in a normal IQ for that age, but still is in a developmental stage where they can go back and forth and play with different things. The concern though now is that the ideologues have created even more rigid stereotypes. So if you're a little girl, let's say you're 3 or 4 and you want to play with trucks, oh, you must be a boy and vice versa. So they have actually made the stereotype so rigid and then funneled these children. And then just as we were talking, many parents don't know what's going on in the schools or don't know what's happening when they're not in the presence of the educators. I felt the calling because I was like, somebody's got to speak up for these children. This is absolute confusion. And I did start to see some, it got to the point where I did see these adolescents in the ICU from overdoses or suicidal attempts because of lack of understanding who they are and the lack of addressing from the medical personnel, the lack of addressing these individuals' mental health problems and their history of trauma and abuse.
Yeah, it's very concerning to me as well. It almost feels like when I read our literature, the pediatric literature, that the cool thing to do, the right thing to do is to jump on this bandwagon, and that the first sign of any kind of confusion, we've got to support them in their confusion. And I feel like we're not guiding them through in a very neutral way. It feels like almost our peers are pushing people towards, you need to, right? Yes, am I wrong on that? Or is that what you're sensing?
No, that's, I mean, it's a political move, right? And it's, we are allowing, I don't say we as in you and I, but in the profession of medicine has been weaponized against children, from a political standpoint and ideology standpoint. And, we know that watch and wait, let them progress. Do not stall a child, because then you further isolate that child. Once you start puberty blockers, they're not going to catch up with their peers. So you've isolated them even further.
Yep, agreed.
And you've left them, you've actually abandoned them, and you've left them in a confused state.
I absolutely agree. And then, you know, I only had one situation where a 16-year-old was wanting surgery, and I was like, going to all lengths to just develop a relationship. Let's just give this time, see if you still feel that way in a year or two. It just seemed like such a rush.
Well, and it's a, you know, these are truly forms of malpractice, because you're performing surgical procedures on healthy children. There's no pathology.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, pathology. And so the issues of not having addressed the reasons as to why this individual has come to this point, that is sort of the atrocity of all of this, is that you have not cared for the patient. You've just gone along with their misunderstanding of who they are.
It's the classic label and treat that we do in medicine. Well, Dr. Monique, let's pivot to vaccines and COVID. We're both pediatricians. Our background is, you know, vaccines was the most important thing we could do to, you know, boost immunity, protect kids from vaccine preventable diseases. And I'm not saying that vaccines are good or bad. I'm just saying traditionally the pediatric community has been all on full court press, safe and effective. Absolutely. We don't look at any downside. It's all upside. Then comes COVID and this vaccine that had never been done before. But just share with me a little of your history on vaccines and then how you've dealt with COVID.
Sure. I think I agree with you. Like most pediatricians, we have been taught this way. And we have been full force for the vaccination schedule, for the immunization schedule. And so when COVID came about and these injections, I began to question. I was like, wow, this is, you know, it's mRNA has been around, this technology's, you know, Malone's been working with it for a few decades, but it never worked. It didn't work in the early 2000s. And so all of a sudden we're going to develop these injections at a warp speed with not the usual multiple years of safety data and studies. And we're going to release this into a mass population event after, you know, 2.5 months of trials.
Yeah.
And it's not like any other technology or any other vaccine that we give children. Big question mark, big red flag goes up. And I thought, this doesn't seem right. Right. This, where is the ethics in this? Like, and the more I read, the more I, looked at the possible, and the potential, consequences, like not good consequences, bad consequences of this, technology being released into humans. That's what spurred me to question more these injections. The politicization of this, it's made me look at other vaccines and their histories, and much of the censored studies, the censored documentaries that we just didn't know about, or if you when you're in a busy career profession, you go with what you're taught and trained.
Yeah.
And so now that I've been able to start looking back, it has made me question so much of what I have been taught and what I have advocated for with the vaccination schedule.
Yep. Well, that's the gift of COVID, I think. It's such a disastrous rollout of a dangerous product that has, in my assessment, and you can see if you feel the same way, but the risks are just so huge compared to the negligible benefits, if there are any at all.
Yeah, right.
Certainly for children.
I don't see. Yes, absolutely. There's no benefits for children. There's absolutely. Yeah. That's what I say. There's no benefits. It's all risk. So why would you unleash these products on children?
Given that situation, and we'll have the fall is coming, right? In pediatrics, every fall it's flu season. Got to get your flu shot 6 months and above. Mm-hmm. And I won't be surprised if they're going to push the COVID jab, either make a combination flu COVID or just you need both.
You need both.
Mm-hmm. And they're going to probably require it for schools in many places.
Yeah. So that, yes. And how can you know, it's interesting because they did all these trials, but they didn't, the placebo group was unblinded so quickly.
Explain that for our viewers.
Sure. So there's a control group and the group that received the COVID injections. What happened within, probably within a couple months after the trials took place, at least for the 5 and 11 year olds, they were unblinded, meaning they took the blindfold away from the individuals who are running the trials, and those who were in the placebo or the group not receiving the injection were allowed to cross over and receive the injection. And we're actually encouraged to. Mm-hmm. So we have no control group.
Yep.
And there wasn't any control for what these injections were, any potential side effects with other vaccines that these children are getting, especially when they were doing the trials in the 6 months to just under 5 years. So there are so many factors that weren't even looked at. And so for us to move forward, and it's still experimental,
and to start giving it with
yes. It's experimental and still emergency use. Right. So to move forward and now act as if, well, it's just going to become part of the mainstream schedule and we're just going to inject these children with this and their flu shots or and all their other vaccinations, really is asking for disaster.
Yeah. It almost feels like true human experimentation. I mean, you're taking healthy kids and injecting them with a dangerous product, and we'll see what happens.
It is.
So, Dr. Monique, I'm going to pick on your ethicist, kind heart background and help me out with something. I have a challenge talking to people in a convincing way to do what seems obvious to me. And my own mom says with this COVID thing, when I'm trying to talk her out of it, basically, she goes, well, Paul, how can you be right and everybody else is wrong? And don't you get that from parents and colleagues? What do you say to that? How do we talk to people so maybe they can listen or hear?
Yes. So first of all, Paul, I want to say you've been fighting it. I would say you've been critically thinking. Now, going back to your question of how to address individuals who just don't see your side and are difficult to speak with, I think people like any of us, they want to be heard, right? Sometimes it's just listening. What is it they're really thinking? And I need to listen to their viewpoint. And then more will come out rather than me shutting them down right away with what I know to be, you know, what I think and know to be true. Because they're not going to open up if I do not allow them that opportunity to bring their stance.
Okay. So, play along with me. I'm going to be your colleague. And Monique, I
heard you put me to the test.
I heard you've gone off the deep end. I mean, you should know better. You're an intensivist. You used to be chief resident. I mean, come on. What's this? You've gone on these, joined all these anti-vaxxers and you're talking about COVID's dangerous. I mean, what gives?
Well, first of all, you said I've joined the anti-vaxxers. Why do you call me an anti-vaxxer?
Well, I mean, anybody who doesn't know that vaccines are safe and effective, I mean, you know, the WHO, the World Health Organization, declared that, you know, vaccine hesitancy is one of the number one dangers in our world. And you seem to have become vaccine hesitant.
So are you specifically speaking about the COVID vaccine?
Well, in this instance, sure, because we haven't had a long enough conversation for me to pick your brain on some of the others.
So do you think the current technology that's used in these products, the mRNA, the viral vector, these are similar to other vaccinations that I've been advocate for in my career?
Well, no, we know this is this new and very, very sophisticated, deep science that we've been working on for decades. So, yeah, absolutely. It is new, but new isn't necessarily worse. In fact, a lot of times it's better.
Well, and how do you define a vaccine? If this is new technology, it should meet the requirement and the definition of a vaccine.
Well, you know, a vaccine will enhance your immunity. And I clearly, this is doing that.
And it should stop transmission, right? Because that's the whole point, right? We don't want to spread the disease to our neighbors and we want to end this pandemic. So it should stop the transmission too, correct?
If you had a perfect vaccine, sure, but you know, nothing's perfect. At least we're enhancing people's immunity and we're saving lives. And, you know, we would have lost millions more probably if it hadn't been for this amazing technology.
And do you agree that the vaccine should prevent the disease as well?
That would be nice. I agree with you there.
So unfortunately, these COVID injections, the mRNA, the viral vector vaccines have not, or injections, I'm going to call them injections because they are not vaccines. They have not prevented transmission, even though the CDC touted they would and the FDA touted they would. And now they have, through time, have had to backtrack because they don't. They have not prevented the disease. So individuals who have been boosted, who have received multiple injections, are faring worse than those who have not received. And they have not prevented the spread. As you will see, the COVID continues.
Exactly. Thanks for playing along with me, Dr. Monique. I could push harder, but that wouldn't be fair on you. I didn't give you any warning that I was going to torment you.
That's okay. This is good. It's just, you know, it's kind of like being in a court. You gotta be able to stand up for these kids.
Yeah. It's honestly one of the hardest things I have is when, I don't know, I think I have a glitch in my ability to just stay completely calm all the time under attack, right? And you stayed calm beautifully. So
maybe that's been a little fine-tuned just from my experience in a critical care setting.
Yeah. Now, have you personally faced any sort of pushback for your position on COVID?
Yes. The policy of my institution was basically that everyone would be mandated to receive the COVID injection. And I did not comply with that policy. I was not going to get the injection based on my conscientious objection, which was my conscience was formed not only by my faith, but also by my experience and my research, that these were experimental products. I'd already been taking care of kids for a year and a half into this pandemic. So I did not receive the injection, and thus I was terminated because of that decision, knowing full well the consequences. I made that decision to not take it. And then I wouldn't have changed. Looking back, I am 100% secure with my decision. And, especially now, you know, what, a year later. So
folks, if you work in critical care, you work in a hospital setting, and to get fired, not like you can go up, open your own little critical care unit.
Correct.
I mean, that's a huge blow to your career. How have you dealt with that?
So I see sometimes when there's an abrupt change, it's because something greater is coming. So that's the way I've seen it. And so I have this great trust that God has this amazing plan. And I mean, it's already, things are starting to unfold. I'm getting to talk to you. Work with the Truth for Health Foundation, which has been really on the front lines of helping individuals receive early treatment, helping those who've been basically imprisoned in hospitals, helping families, helping the military. And you know, with me being part of the pediatric forum, we've been able to reach out to parents to help give them the information that's often censored, or they haven't heard from their own providers.
Thank you for your courage and your faith. Wow. I just got a warm spot for you for sure. Mm-hmm. And such admiration. It's tough. You're young. You know, I started this fight in earnest further along in my career, so that knowing full well eventually what was going to happen, which is happening. Mm-hmm. So I commend you for standing on your principles and
doing what's right. We need more and more people like you. Were you in the ICU after kids were starting to get the COVID jab, or you got ousted?
Just barely. So the myocarditis wasn't necessarily hitting. I was hearing about it, individuals being transferred either to the floor, and there were some that would be sent to the ICU. But when I was on service, I didn't have any specifically with it, although I've dealt with myocarditis because I've worked in a full med-surg cardiac unit. So,
right.
But the amount of myocarditis that we're hearing now, I mean, it's just on the news all the time. Yeah. Before then, it was rare to see it, and it was rare. Well, it was rare for me to see, and I worked with cardiac patients. So
yeah, if anybody would have seen it, it would have been you.
Mm-hmm. And what I'm seeing now, or what I foresee is that many of these children who will have receive the injection will be asymptomatic, and potentially, based on the studies, they will have no lab findings, no concern on echocardiogram. Yet the MRI, the cardiac MRI, is going to show either inflammation or scarring that you're not going to pick up on screening test. And so there is a concern that we are going to have children who've received these injections that are healthy, asymptomatic, who go out on the field. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Yeah, previously healthy, and athletes who go out on the field, we're seeing that.
Just dropping dead sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Without any signs or symptoms, which might have been picked up on a cardiac MRI, but that's a big study to just perform. So
there isn't the money or the will to do that investigation, unfortunately. They're not even doing autopsies on these folks. And it's just tragic.
Right. Well, and I mean, it's put providers, pediatricians and family physicians in a pickle, right? Mm-hmm. So now we're not going to advocate for the injections, but now we have to take care of these kids, and how do we know that they don't have subclinical myocarditis?
Yeah.
If they're not
testing with a test that'll pick it up.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it's a huge concern of mine as well. So what's your message to parents? There's still, fortunately, a sizable number of children who have not yet succumb to getting this shot, this jab. What's your suggestion to parents?
First, I commend those who have not taken their children to receive these injections. You are doing the right thing for your child. You are advocating for your child. The government will not advocate for your child. The CDC will not. The FDA will not. You are the primary defender of your child. And so if you are on the fence, I plead with you to remain strong. These injections have proven no benefit. The trials show no benefit. Actually, they showed negative efficacy. And we are seeing a very great signal in adverse events and deaths related to these injections that the CDC and FDA have ignored, and they are supposed to be the ones governing and being the ones looking at all the VAERS data, and they have conveniently conveniently ignored the data, or just simply push it under the rug to continue with this agenda.
Yeah. my assessment is that these three-letter agencies are completely compromised.
They are.
Yeah, they have to be, because, I mean, in the name of public health, they are unleashing this most dangerous, untested product and continuing to say, get it, when we already know better.
Right. They're, public health is no longer trustworthy, or the institutions that that are deemed public health is not trustworthy. And so if you can't, if you've already shown that you can't be trusted, then how are you going to move forward with further products that you're, quote, regulating or advising? I mean, there, it has created a world of skepticism, and rightfully so. Like, we should now we know what we've followed along with for so long. Our eyes are being opened to the harm that it has been unleashed on humanity. And it's something that's greater than just the profession of medicine. There's a greater realm that has taken over medicine. And my hope is that we are able to usher in a new form of medicine. We were able to reclaim it and rebuild it, where the individual person, mind, body, spirit, soul is taken care of. So that's my hope.
We will do it, Dr. Monique. We will do it. And you will be needed, because I no longer am close enough to my residency to be able to run an ICU. It's too far behind me. I've been in the, clinical trenches doing ears, throats, nose, basic stuff. We will need your expertise. We're going to need a parallel system. I think the current system is so broken, we can't fix it.
Yeah, right. Well, the mantra, see one, do one, teach one. So, so you can do it.
No, I could. I'll be there cheering you on for sure, and do whatever I can to make sure we move towards the direction that we need to move. Those of us who are aware or becoming aware of this vitally important movement for mind, body, spirit, soul, and our eyes are being opened.
Yeah.
And thank you for your incredible stand and sacrifice. And where can people go to get more information, either about things that are important to you or information that's important to them?
Sure. So I started a little website where I've just written some articles for myself and for anybody who wants to read them. It's at www.humandignityspeaks.com.
Humandignityspeaks.com. Mm-hmm. Very nice. And I know you're very involved with the Truth for Health Foundation. Mm-hmm. And people can go to, is that the name of their website as
well? Yes. Yes. It's truthforhealth. I believe it's org.org.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Truthforhealth.org.
If you just type in Truth for Health, you'll find it, right?
Yep. Perfect. Yeah. I did actually attend last week's session with the cardiologist.
Yes. And
that was very powerful.
Mm-hmm. Phenomenal. Yep.
Well, God bless you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being on this show. You're blessing the audience, and I can't thank you enough.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Welcome, Bernadette, to Against the Wind. It's so good to have you back. You cover our Be the News segment, and I am excited to hear what you're going to cover, because you are going to take us back, kind of take us to school on social marketing, how they manipulate us, and cover this thing called the presumptive method, which I've been taught in some of the trainings for pediatricians. You just have to kind of figure out a way to avoid questions and just walk people into their vaccines without informed consent.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, this has been going on for years, and organizations like Informed Choice Washington and others throughout the world have been trying to shine a spotlight on what's going on. So when public health is always used to a certain degree, messaging put out there, you know, roll up your sleeve and do it for whatever, for various things. I mean, when we're talking about encouraging people to quit smoking, you know, seems like
That's a good thing.
But when you use that same method of social marketing, and in today's world where social marketing has such depth of reach and they have such control of the message, it is really very concerning. And there are, you can see here some titles of books that are published about it. You can get a degree in this. University of Washington has courses that you can take on social marketing. So there's two posts on Informed Choice Washington. I encourage you to go look for the term like social marketing, and you will find them. About these issues, it's really important to know that everything that you're seeing, like some of the cartoons that are out, this one I developed myself, that's kind of showing what we experience, you know, individuals are being screamed at saying, anyway. And then go ahead.
I was going to say, for COVID, I mean, you drive down the street and you'll see a billboard, you know, safe and effective, get your free shots here, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we're saturated in it. Absolutely. Yep. And this is $1 billion. I think the Biden administration has spent more than $2 billion with a B dollars trying to overcome COVID-19 vaccine hesitancy. It's really concerning. So educate yourself on that, on the history of that. It's been going on since public health was really developed, but over the past few years, it's been on steroids. And it's really concerning because it makes it very difficult to have two points of view. And so then I want to switch over, though, to even older posts that I recently republished, actually just this morning, because they're starting this again. And now we're getting to the presumptive method. So there's this gentleman, a doctor named Doug Opel, who has been researching vaccine hesitancy for many years. He completely ignores the very important medical and scientific reasons and product failure reasons for many parents who are either delaying spacing or saying no to all shots. No, right. He only looked at trying to figure out how to coerce them, although he says it's not coercion. To give you an idea, like here's a quote from one of his published papers. The appeals to emotion that are often made by a social marketing campaign's promotional strategy may leave some feeling that social marketing is coercive. And while coercion may not be all that bad, many argue that coercion is justifiable in vaccination programs when others are placed at substantial risk of serious harm, or generally to control behaviors that are not only harmful, but simply wrong. We would argue that social marketing is not coercive. I mean, can you?
Wow. So I am going to coerce you because I know best what's best for you and your child. And therefore, I can do that. We can bypass informed consent completely.
Completely. And now what is happening, and soon there will be a third post about this topic on informedchoicewa.org, about the most recent efforts to use the presumptive method. And I'm going to have you explain that. To slip the COVID shot into routine usage. And my call to action is this. My call to action for everybody watching and listening to Be in the News is, if your doctor attempts to integrate COVID shots into your routine care, ICWA, Informed Choice Washington, I am President Policy Director from Informed Choice Washington, we highly recommend you fire him or her and provide them with the data on the shots they need to read as you walk out the door.
Yep. Absolutely. If you don't have a physician or provider who's providing you with informed consent, which means you have the choice, it has to include choice, then you don't have informed consent and you need to find another doctor, folks. We're long past the time where a doctor knows best, especially when it comes to pharmaceutical products. No. Just say no. No, I was trained on how to do this. So the thing is, if you get into a discussion with a patient, I'm a pediatrician, and mom starts, could be dad, oftentimes it's mom, starts asking a bunch of questions, you lost the battle. They're going to want to go home and think about it. So you have to avoid questions is what we're taught. In other words, you use this presumptive method, and it goes something like this. And my hand's on the door. I'm about ready to leave. So you wait until it's time to kind of wrap up the visit. You've checked their ears and throat and listened to their heart and done all the voodoo stuff we do to, you know, make it look like we're real doctors and we're doing an amazing job of making sure your baby, your child is fine. And then hand on the door, said, well, John, it's time for Johnny's shots. I'm looking forward to seeing you in a couple months. And I'm walking out the door.
Yeah. Okay. And you're saying that the nurse is on her way in.
Yeah, nurse is on the way with the shots, and so great to see you. And you just do a little more niceties and butter them up and out you go. And most parents in that hit with that, like deer in the headlights. Well, it's so good to see you, Dr. Paul. And they forgot the fact that, wait a minute, what shots and why? And all the questions you came ready to ask kind of get lost. That's that presumptive method. And it's highly effective. Now, those of you who've been following me for a while, you also know, and I know Bernadette, you know this, I make a lot of money when I can talk you into doing routine vaccines. And I'm going to make more money by adding the COVID shot to this schedule. And I mean, I am in business, right? This is how doctors think. Actually, most doctors don't even realize how significant the income is from vaccines. They've been sort of taught that, oh no, there's just a minor markup. That's true. The money comes from the admin fee, and docs don't know that. I published a paper on that. It's massively lucrative. More than half of a pediatrician's income basically comes from well child visits and vaccines. You wouldn't survive without it.
Yeah. And you figured out, though, how to give fully informed consent and ways to survive without it until, you know, the Oregon Medical Board decided to ask you to prove what you're doing is safe, and you did, and they didn't like that.
Yeah, so, it is possible if you're a pediatrician or a physician and you want to give true informed consent, it is possible to do that and still survive. Yes, you're going to have to maybe work a little harder. Yes, you might have to have some mid-level providers who are helping you cut the cost of that, you know, overhead. Doctors cost a lot. I mean, just the hourly rate for a doctor is close to double that of a mid-level. And, and yet, you know, I've got a great team here. I mean, they're better than I am. So you don't have to have, you don't have to have an MD behind your name or a DO behind your name to give really good care. I'm not trying to put down those of us who went that route and got a lot of education, but you want people whose hearts are in the right place.
Yes.
Who think, still are able to think critically, look at the data, and give true informed consent, which has to include the risks.
Yeah, exactly. So there we are. There's the groundwork, and everybody's got, the good news is you just have to do this once, right? Or maybe twice if you've got a couple of doctors. If everybody listening to your program ensured that the practitioners that they pay their money to are ethically aligned with them, we can change the system. So if you're still seeing a doctor that uses, that coerces vaccinations in any way, you need to leave them. You need to focus your healthcare dollars toward those in the healthcare system who support your ethical and way of going and your approach to healthcare, period. You can do it. Everybody can do this. So
absolutely. I would just add this. Thank you, Bernadette, for that. Let's say you're all in on the vaccines. They should still be providing you with informed consent. And once you're given enough information, the problem is you're just not getting enough. You're getting a whitewash. Here's the VIS, vaccine information sheet from the CDC, which just minimizes side effects, maximizes benefit, and leaves you going, oh, wow, yeah, of course I want to do that.
Right. What I have found when they say they're going to give you the risk benefit, they give the risk of the disease and the benefit of the vaccine.
Yep.
You're not getting the benefits of experiencing, you know, any particular illness in early childhood,
right.
You know, broader, durable, naturally acquired immunity, avoiding some cancers in the future, according to studies. You're not given any of that. Right. At all. And you're not told about alternatives,
right?
You know,
nor the minimal risk of most of the diseases for which we have vaccines.
No, I
mean, their fallback on that is just, well, you don't want to go back to the dark ages, do you? No. It's like, no, you know, we've made a whole lot of progress since then. We're not going back.
No,
my child doesn't get this shot right now.
No, exactly. You know, you would think in 2022 that we would know what makes real health, and we do. It's just real health doesn't make a lot of money for certain individuals. So,
yeah. Wonderful. So folks, avoid when you sniff out the presumptive method, you know, you're being taken along for a ride when they're just assuming that you're going to do something, but they're not really taking the time to give you the pros and the cons and the alternative, one of which is no. Right? I don't want to do this. I need to think about it. And parents, that's your best opportunity for the easiest way to avoid being hoodwinked is just say, you know, I need more information. I need to think about it. That way you're not having to say no and having this awkward tension. You just basically are saying, no, I need more time, which you probably do.
You can. And I like that advice, Dr. Paul, but Bernadette's a little bit more courageous because we have got to flip the paradigm. It has to be fully informed consent, and not vaccinating has got to be a valid, respected choice. So educate as you're on your way out the door.
I absolutely agree. I only gave my little alternative approach. If you don't know where you're going yet, you may not want to burn that bridge on your way out the door. What if Johnny gets really ill tomorrow? But
Right. Okay.
I agree with you. Find a provider who's aligned with your philosophy and your way of thinking. And even if you can't find that, at least they will honor your choices no matter what.
Exactly.
Thank you, Bernadette.
Thank you.
Dr. Paul, thanks for watching the show. Please visit doctorsandscience.com. There you can access our members-only section. This show is member-supported. We don't have to take sponsors. We don't have to have anybody controlling the content of our show. This is a huge perk most people aren't aware of. Your membership gives you access to my ebooks, transcripts of every show, PowerPoints from talks I'm giving around the country, and live bonus peeks at behind-the-scenes work we're doing, my off-the-cuff thoughts and reviews on current events. Your support makes all this possible. Thank you. Help me spread the truth and share this on social media and with your friends at doctorsandscience.com. I look forward to running with you against the wind. Go to our website, doctorsandscience.com, sign up, donate if you can, and let's make this the weekly show the nation's been waiting for. I'm Dr. Paul.